Hi, folks. Jack Spirko here. Today you are listening to an episode of TSP Rewind. Commercial-free versions of past episodes. Podcast blasts from the past. I put these up when I can't do a show due to professional commitments or rare vacations. These podcasts will appear in standard iTunes, Stitcher, and other feeds, but will be titled TSP Rewind episodes and numbered accordingly. And today, folks, we are rewinding back to April 22nd, 2015. Which 2015 don't sound that long ago. That's 11 freaking years now. As you listen to this, I am probably in an airplane somewhere over the United States between here and Las Vegas. If you downloaded it the day that it was published anyway, it's a reasonable bet that that's what's going on. And the topic of today's show is originally episode 1562 on being a sovereign human. And I decided to run this. All I do when I do these rewinds is I scroll down to the archives and pick a random month and year and start going through and find something that interests me for running as a rewind, and then check to see if I run it as a rewind before, because with almost 4,000 episodes and 300 rewinds, yeah, I can do better than rerunning the rewind that I rewound already, if that makes any sense, most of the time anyway. And if it passes the kind of sniff test, I want to do this right now, and I haven't run it before, I'll run it. And that's kind of how I found this one. But when I found it, what made me pick it is I have had a lot of people accuse me recently because of my stance on illegal immigration and what's going on, and how basically the big problem most people have with it is I think that the way the protesters are behaving does not make them protesters. It makes them agitators, instigators, criminals, and retards. And so it's not necessarily that I completely agree with the government. It's that you can't do this. But at the same time, I still believe in individual autonomy and individual sovereignty and individual freedom. So I figured that this episode in particular would let me speak to that a little bit rather than rehashing what's in it or anything, but adding some new things on the front end of it. What does it mean to be a sovereign human? What does it mean to be philosophically anyway an anarchist and yet still be, you know, having common sense and brains and accepting reality instead of living your own fantasy world and being a thing called a pragmatist? What does that all mean when we put it together? Well, I think the way that I can explain it is I absolutely agree with people who say the government is a criminal enterprise. Okay, I do. And I also agree with the concept, if I'm carrying a gun and some guy comes up to me in an alleyway and says, give me your money or I'm going to stab you with this screwdriver, I'm going to shoot him in the fucking face. Because in that situation, I've done a calculation. I think I can shoot this guy in the face repeatedly before he stabs me with that screwdriver. And even if I get stuck with that screwdriver, unless he gets it exactly right, I get one hole, he gets six, and he gets dead. And that's what's going to happen, right? So that's an equation that's calculated. Let's say there's another way going on. I got a gun on me. Okay, I still got a gun, so I could do something. But when I get stopped in that alleyway, there's three dudes. Two of them are on, you know, kind of at my 7 and my 4 o'clock. And then I got a guy at my 12 o'clock, and all four of them have guns drawn on me. And now they say they want my wallet. Well, what am I going to do? They're getting my fucking wallet. The deck is stacked against me. I'm beat. When I say, if that happened to somebody and they tried to fight back and they immediately got shot, maybe somebody else saw it, a third party observer said what happened, and I said that person made a dumb decision, that doesn't mean I've thrown in with the assailants. It means that was an illogical, dumb thing to do. Now, in this case with the government, I actually agree on throwing illegal aliens out of the country, especially the ones that they're particularly focused on. Not the only ones that they're... I know they deported one and he works at the coffee shop. I don't give a shit, right? One was probably with frigging, you know, Esteban, who was wanted for child trafficking, and that's why they asked him for his shit when they found, you know, Juan living in the same apartment with him. That's what's going on, okay? But it wouldn't matter... It wouldn't matter if I philosophically agreed with the protesters. Let's say these protesters were in the street right now, and they were protesting something that I completely agree with. Let's say that they were protesting gun rights, and they said that we don't have enough gun rights, but they were using the same tactics, right? Let's say that the government was you know in town and they were going after gangbangers with guns. And that meant that sometimes they were taking guns from people that shouldn't have. I would completely agree. You shouldn't take guns from people that don't have, you know, that legally own their guns. And I personally believe if you haven't committed some kind of a crime, you should be able to legally own a gun. And I mean, almost like unless you're actively committing a crime with a gun. Like, I think you should be able to buy your gun from Sears. You follow me here. But my fellow pro-gun friends were in the streets freezing ice into bottles and throwing them at ATF agents, who I have actually a much lower opinion of ATF agents than ICE agents, by the way, right? They were throwing rocks and bricks and ice bottles at ATF agents. They were blocking the vehicles of ATF agents in the middle of the road. They were, you know, screaming slurs, spitting on them, dressing up like furries, doing all the exact same thing that these idiots are doing in the streets today. Do you think I would take a different view of this overall? Other than I would say I do happen to agree with the intent, but this is all stupid. Well, this, you would think, well, he's supposed to be talking about being a sovereign human, and if I'm a sovereign human, I'll do anything I want. Oh, yes, but part of being a sovereign human is now you must deal with the consequences of your actions. See, you see how it works? Like, there is a payment for making this decision, and it can be in money, it can be in loss of your life, it can be a loss of your freedom. There is a payment for every action you take. And then it is up to you as a sovereign to acknowledge that reality and to deal with that reality and not expect somebody else to fix it for you because they happen to agree with what your main claim is. Here's another example. What was the guy's name? The crypto grifter. Roger Ver, right? Roger Ver was wanted by the government for not paying income tax on millions and millions and millions of dollars in profitable Bitcoin and other cryptocurrency trades. And he wanted people to give money to his legal defense fund to help him get out of trouble when he had every means to get out of trouble, which is just pay the damn tax bill. I think all tax is theft. So people came to me and said, help Roger. I said, fuck Roger, I don't care. He's a dumbass. He publicly defied government. He publicly stated, here's the money I made. He publicly said, fuck you, I'm not paying you because I'm not an American citizen anymore, and I'm moving to Spain, so fuck you, or wherever the hell he moved to. And the government said, yeah, no. Now, do I think the government should have that power? No. But as a pragmatist, do they? Of course they do. As a sovereign, when he made that move, he took that risk with full knowledge of what he was doing. He wasn't confused. It wasn't like he couldn't afford to pay the tax bill. It wasn't like he couldn't have done some things to more effectively hide what he was doing. But he wanted to flaunt it and try to look like a badass. Sorry, bro. And as far as I know, he ended up not in prison and made some kind of financial deal, which is what he could have always done. Now, I'm not going to come on the air and tell you guys to throw your money in on with him. I mean, he made his deal. He paid the tax bill that he had. I think it was like $50 million. And do I think he should have had to pay I don't think anybody should have to pay income tax, but you do. And part of being a sovereign is understanding that. And I could keep going. Like, my position on all of this is dramatically consistent. The people out in the streets that you're cheering for right now, some of you anyway, by the way, they're the same people that wanted you locked down for COVID. They're the same people that burned shit to the ground during the George Floyd riots. They're the same people that said if you don't get vaccinated, you should have your children taken away from you. See, the people gravitating to this issue are the same people that have always been for taking away your freedom. And I look at this from a standpoint of what are the consequences of reality, not what would things be like if everybody did the things that I think they should do. That's religious thinking. It has no place in the pragmatism of real life. That's your internal philosophy, and I encourage you to embrace your internal philosophy and live your life as best you can with the reality understood in addition to your philosophy, how you interact with others, but how others are going to interact with you. And when I think about it that way, when you say, do you trust your government, and I say no, then as a sovereign individual who doesn't want to lose any more of my sovereignty than I already have and wants every avenue open to trying to reclaim it, well, what I don't want is my nation full of third world criminals. I don't want my nation full of third worlders, period. So if we start with the criminals and we end up with everybody, I still don't care. And this is why. The less I trust my government, the more I can allow this type of behavior to occur. We already have an understanding that the people that we're talking about will not be held to the same standard you are. They have much lower standard than you do, which means less freedom for you. You see how that works? It's like trying to put people on a court and they're going to play basketball against each other. But one side, like half the rules in the book do not apply, and the other half are going to be leniently enforced, and your team is going to have the rules religiously enforced on you. That's the situation and dynamic we're setting up. So when I say all people are free and sovereign individuals, I mean it, but I also know that the world is what the world is. And just like you can't walk off a cliff and say, fuck gravity, you can't walk into a country and say, fuck their immigration services. And again, you can think you should be able to, but if that were true, there's a whole other list of things that would come with that, because what you're talking about is the disassemblage of the state itself, which I'm all for. But when you take something apart, you got to think about the order that you take it apart in. And that is not the place to start taking apart a government. To not take away its power, but at the same time dissolve its borders is a recipe for disaster, no matter how much you are for individual freedom. I should be able to go anywhere I want. And you can, but you have to do certain things to be able to go there. If you want to go down to the bottom of the ocean, you have to take a class or go ahead and try it. Without a class, you'll probably kill yourself and learn how to use the right equipment. And then you can put tanks on, and if you're going deep enough, rebreathers or whatever, and you can go down. And you can go there for as long as that equipment lets you go there. If I want to go to England, the process is dramatically similar. I have to get a thing called a passport. I have to be allowed exit from my country and entry from the United Kingdom. Okay, and they will give me a visa, depending on business, pleasure, whatever, for a certain amount of time. And when that time runs out, I have to fucking leave and go back where I came from, just like the diver has to come back to the surface. It shouldn't be that way. Yeah, but the ocean doesn't care, and neither does, you know, the UK's immigration service if you're American. Apparently, if you're a North African, that's a different, you know, scenario or whatever, especially if you come in the back door. It's actually funny. If you come in the front door, everybody has held to the same standard. It's only people that break in illegally in the first place that come in the back door that get the exceptions. You understand what I'm saying? Well, your sovereignty as being an individual in your country, and yes, it's your country, and no, it's in a stolen land, and shut up with that, is actually weakened if you allow your government to have another weapon. Well, they're going to get bigger and stronger by deporting people. I don't know how that works. I don't know how that works. They already have the power to deport people. Using the power they already have doesn't make them more powerful. It makes them equally powerful. However, adding another 15 to 20 million illegals to this country, which is what will happen if we don't fix this, does make your government infinitely more powerful if you look at the way that they've leveraged that population already. It's up to you. And this is the beauty of today's episode. If you disagree with everything that I said, you get to do that. It's totally acceptable. It's totally okay. You have every right to disagree. But if you act on your disagreements, the consequences that come along with the FA and lead to the FO are yours. It's not because Jack's opinion was different than yours. It's that Jack's risk assessment was more accurate than yours. Anyway, wanted to get some of that off my chest this week, and because I cut the week short with the travel, I didn't think I was going to be able to, but I figured out how to fit it into this one. Bit of a long intro to a rewind, but hopefully that makes sense, and hopefully it will have some impact on how you listen to this episode and think about how it applies to yourself and in your life. I believe that most people that are for greater freedom and liberty actually aren't ready for that yet. In fact, they don't really want it. They just say they do. They've chosen a side of the dichotomy, and they want the government to control people at a very, very intensive level. And they just want it done their way. And the reason that applies to the whole kinds of things like witches and stuff is that what I don't believe has changed in history is that governments, regardless of whether they're dictatorships or monarchies, etc., tend to actually be a reflection of the majority of the people within the state that the government exists in. And this government today that's out of control, that's irresponsible, that can't manage a checkbook, that infringes on the rights of others, is actually a reflection of the people. We tend to look back and think, well, you know, the state put people to death for stupid offenses that we would never put anybody to death for, and say, well, look how evil the state is. And while I agree, we're letting an awful lot of people off the hook. You know, when they were hanging people in a town square, all the people that came to watch because it was entertainment, yeah. Do you think if all of those people would have been ready to start tearing people apart, you know, and revolting over such things, that the governments of the day, even back then, would have done that? When you hear these cries of burn the witch, in this satirical comedy, it's the only comedy of its kind, really. I don't think anybody's ever really done anything like Monty Python ever before or since. But and it can only come from the English, seriously. But there's this truth underlying, horrific truth to it. It wasn't the state that wanted the witches burned. It was the people who brought the witches to the state to have them burned. And then the state wrapped it around a cloak of legitimacy through a trial of sorts. And in the history segment, it's like, okay, well, somebody has to have been harmed, at least. You can't just take some crazy person walking down the street, call them a witch, and burn them because 6 acres away somebody's rice crop, or in the case of England, you know, their wheat crop failed, which was a start, and at least not burning people was, it's still horrible. But I mean, if I was going to be executed and there was no way I could stop it, and I would fight. They would drag me down that last mile. Because I would fight for any chance to survive, especially if I'm being wrongfully executed. But if put to a question, we can either set you on fire or hang you. I'll go with the hanging. Not happy about it, but yeah. So, and see, in the state's mind, that was mercy. And in the minds of the people, that was mercy, because the two were a reflection of the same. And that kind of leads us into my topic for today's show, which is on being a sovereign human. And I want to explain to you why I'm even using the term sovereign human. And it actually ends up being a good thing, I think. And I want to be real clear right up front that I don't believe this is my term. I think it's been used a lot. So it's sovereign man, sovereign individual, etc. I like human because it's all-encompassing. But a long time ago, I talked about the concept of being truly a sovereign citizen under the Constitution of the United States. And the reality is there's a segment of the sovereign citizen movement who have pretty much ruined the word. Now, there's a lot of people in the sovereign citizenry world who are peaceful and tend to operate via turning the state onto itself via the courts. And that's what that movement was supposed to be about. You just take everything the state throws at you and you just keep turning it back on them and take every victory you can get. But there's enough idiots that have committed acts of violence under the phrase that's pretty much ruined it. And the word, I don't know that it can ever be salvaged or saved ever again. However, so often is the case, that which is ruined often leads to that which is better. In this case, I think the term sovereign human is a much better term. Citizen denotes a state and a state denotes control. But no matter our state of or residence or citizenry, we're all humans on this big floating island we call Earth. Again, I'm not the first person to use the term sovereign human or sovereign individual by a long shot, but I do think it's a better way to understand both the problems in front of us and the solutions to them. And it's really necessary that I think we begin thinking this way if we're going to solve the massive problems we have. So I'd like to share another example. There's so many, but this one just came to me today of a problem that's been created by the state, but I do believe is a reflection of individuals that are okay with it in the citizenry. And I shared this on Facebook, and ironically, it's kind of a sovereign citizen model that's being used to fight it because it's now being taken before the United States Supreme Court. But here's the headline. And you have to ask yourself how this can happen in the United States of America in the first place. Raisin farmer challenging USDA's $700,000 fine before the Supreme Court. Well, I mean, you could get fined for a lot of things, right? How about this? A California farmer is fighting the government to keep the fruits of his labor. Raisin producer Marvin Horn is heading to the United States Supreme Court on Wednesday in a bid to stop the federal government. Listen to this. From seizing his dried fruit crop, almost half of it, without just compensation. He plans to argue the nearly 80-year-old federal law. See, it's not Obama, okay? It's not Obama doing this. This is how long this mindset's been with us that we've allowed this to go on. A nearly 80-year-old federal law designed to keep prices steady violates his Fifth Amendment right to just compensation for a taking by the government. Horn has been fighting the government over raisin seizures for more than a decade. First by claiming he was not subject to the law, and now by claiming the law is unconstitutional. He first ran afoul of the U.S. Department of Agriculture in 2002 when it moved to take 47% of his crop. He sought to organize opposition, establishing the Raisin Valley Marketing Association, a coalition of 61 raisin growers in Fresno and Moderna counties. Quote, "A lot of us jumped up and yelled and said, 'No, it's crazy. What's the matter with you guys?'" Horn told NPR. "It was to no avail, and that's when I came home and I talked to my wife, and we said, 'No, we're not going to deliver.'" Horn of Fresno is both a handler and producer of raisins, two occupations treated differently under the New Deal era policy. Producers grow grapes, handlers dry and package them. The law in question allows the federal government to seize as much as 47% of the handler's goods, depending on market conditions in a given year. The seized raisins are warehoused for months or years and then sold back to handlers who sell them on the international market. The law was crafted to avoid a raisin glut, and the government uses the proceeds to help the industry promote raisin consumption in foreign markets. Horn and his wife Laura initially claimed them as producers. They were not subject to the program, but the USDA demanded the crop, and when he refused, imposed a $700,000 fine and penalty. Under the current case, Horn is arguing the raisin raid violates his constitutional rights. I'd say it violates his human right to property, but I'll just keep reading. The law has a support in the raisin industry. There is where you should have a Fred Sanford moment. The law has support in the raisin industry. According to the USDA, more than 99% of America's raisins and 40% of the world's supply comes from California. But prices tend to fluctuate sharply from year to year. More than 1,600 raisin growers from California have joined the USDA in its defense of the program and say the homes are free riders who evaded marketing orders and yet benefited from the higher prices. You read the rest if you want to. So, gee, big agriculture agrees with big government about the right of government to take away your property. But see, there's higher price. Well, maybe if there wasn't a law that allowed the government to take half of your production away from you and decide when and how much to sell it back to you for while never paying you for it in the first place, maybe if that didn't exist, then there wouldn't be these higher prices. So at the same time, you have a government screaming that we need to make sure that the poor have access to food, and we need subsidies in the agriculture market to keep prices down. Where here you have a clear indication that the government has used a reverse subsidy to keep prices elevated and artificially high. with no interest in, hey, this stuff could be feeding people. And once again, you see the rise of the state in agriculture is directly connected to storability. You notice they don't do this with grapes, because they can't. This is why the government always incentivizes the production of storable foods. Not because they want you to be a prepper and put them in your cabinet. That would be fine. But because they themselves can seize, grab, manipulate, and control, and they can put a couple hundred million tons of soybean away and know they can put it back in the market whenever they want to. Where they can't do it with potatoes. A little bit, but nowhere near to the level. And they certainly can't do it with tomatoes unless we put them in a can. Therefore, we'll regulate the producer and the handler separately, and we'll steal from one to the benefit of the other. If somebody happens to be both, we're stealing from him to his own benefit, and he should just shut up and take it. This is the world we live in today. Now, if this law has been around 80 years, and the people that you would think opposed to it are actually for it, doesn't it make my case that the average individual in this country that seems to be so opposed to their government actually isn't? This is what I mean when people say, well, you know, third parties, why don't third parties get more support? If they could just get in the debates, if this or that or the other. Listen, unless a third party gives people more of what they want, which is greater government control, nobody's going to vote for them. And when I say nobody, I mean nobody in excess of 10 to 15% of the population. And a lot of the people that will vote for a third party, a libertarian-type party candidate, don't really know what they're voting for. They're just dissatisfied. They don't really understand. If you actually started explaining to them, like, if we ran things this way, here's all the things the government would stop doing, and here's the growing pains that that would take, they might not be so for it. And you might see them gravitate right back to either the left or right side of the state-based paradigm dichotomy. And for every person that will vote for a legitimate libertarian, there's someone out there that would probably counter that by voting for a Green Party type candidate, a full-on socialist, a natural socialist, right? A people socialist, whatever kind of crap. It's just another version of the left side of the dichotomy with a different spin. And so what that means is that we live in a nation where we believe that the ballot box is the solution, and it isn't, but it could be. But it will never be the solution under the current thinking of the population. The current population will never elect a Ron Paul, and for me, that's not even far enough when it comes to freedom and liberty. It would be, I would support it. I would actually become politically active if I thought, not Rand, but Ron had a shot at the presidency. I really would. I trust that things would get as much better as they can right now. But I also believe this. He would become very quickly one of the most ineffective presidents in history, and all the good that was done would be immediately countered by the next statist put in his place because the people aren't ready yet. The people are still screaming, burn her! Burn the witch! That's what people are still doing. So we need to change the minds of the people and operate on our own as individual, sovereign individuals until then. And it is only by spreading that that I think we can ever actually improve, not the United States, but the world as a whole in regards to liberty. That I think we've come as far as we can with an incremental process based on the state being altered. And now it comes to a point of, okay, we've altered the state, now let's begin to deconstruct it. And instead of trying to do it with a frontal assault, let's first by starting to understand the dynamic that since the state in its current form is a reflection of the mindset of its citizens, that the mindset is the root of the problem and where we need to address the problem. And then we don't have to argue about which criminal is better for the country. And in the meantime, we get to create as much individual liberty in our own lives through this process as is possible under the current reality. So that's why I think this is a really important topic to understand. And I think I should start out with, what exactly is the concept of individual human sovereignty? And it's pretty simple. It's very keeping with the Constitution of the United States. It's even more keeping with our founders' views as expressed, not necessarily as enacted. The words of Jefferson and Washington very much back this up. Some of their actions, once given the power of the presidency, failed to meet their rhetoric. It's typical with politicians. Though I would say that both were a far cut better than what we have today. I also think back to that time, and I think of somebody like James Madison, who was the president of the United States during the War of 1812. And this also makes my case about, even when politicians aren't perfect, still being a reflection of the people and being better or worse based on that. But in the War of 1812, of course, eventually Washington was burned. And with the Capitol aflame, Madison, along with his security detail, saw to the evacuation of his wife and other members of his staff. And then, as they were considered safe, he climbed onto his horse and rode his horse back into the Capitol as it burned, looking for others and encouraging them to retreat orderly, and put himself at considerable risk to do so. I ask you, any of you, no matter your age, in the life of any living human, with the possible exception of Dwight David Eisenhower, was there any president that you believe would have done this? And then, just to drive the point home, from 1975, 1972 onward, is there any president that you can see to have done this? Do you think Richard Nixon would have put himself in that type of a risk for the safety of others during a national emergency? Jimmy Carter, Ford, he probably would have fell down. Reagan, really? Bush the first? Clinton? Can you see Bush the second doing this? Can you see Barack Obama doing this? Is there a member on either side running for the nomination with any serious potential to win it that you can see this happening from right now? Can you see Hillary Clinton doing that, or Ted Cruz, or Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Elizabeth Warren, Scott Walker? I can't see any of these people being willing to do that. I could be wrong, but I think that's also a reflection of the people. I think the average person in 1812 in this country would have charged into the fight. And once it was determined that we have to retreat to fight another day, would do what they could to aid and abet their fellow countrymen in getting the hell out of Dodge in an organized manner. And that's why the leadership had that viewpoint at that time. Not all of it, but some of it. See, again, we come back to this important understanding. The leadership is a reflection of the people. It's a very hard pill to swallow because it tells you how deep the problem is. It's not just that you're controlled, it's that you're so perfectly controlled that you actually agree with what you claim to disagree with. And the view of individual human sovereignty is that that's all bull. That as a being yourself, through either your creation or your existence, depending on what you believe, you have certain human rights. And we'll get into more about what some of those are and what they mean in a moment, but it's just that in of itself, that there is no entity apart from yourself that should be able to have any control over certain things in your life or block your pursuit of certain things. And that is basic individual human sovereignty. And that is the message that we need to spread to people, because it starts with them, and it's something no one will tend to disagree with as long as you're talking about them with it. And if you do that with them long enough, their mind might open up enough to see that it should apply to others equally. So if I tell you, you should be able to do anything you want as long as what you're doing doesn't hurt anybody else, most people will agree with that. If I give an example of something you should be able to do, as long as you stay focused on yourself, and as long as it's something you would do, you tend to agree. The majority of people, the minute I make it not about them, it's about somebody else choosing to do something they would not do, if they have not yet mentally advanced to a point of recognition of rights must exist for all if they are to exist for any, will immediately begin to turn on that and say, I don't know. Right? If I say, well, you should be able to build your house any way that you want to because it's your property and you bought it and you paid for it. And if you want your house to be a star shape, you should be able to do that. They'll say, well, of course I should. I'm not going to do it, but I should be allowed to if I want to. But then if I explain that somebody across the street is trying to build a house in some unique fashion or way or something that conflicts with codes, they start to get really pull back on whether or not that should be the case. Well, it might affect my property values. And, you know, I mean, like, there's these codes for a reason. And it could go through all types of issues, social and fiscal both, where people have that tendency. It's okay as long as it's me. But if you can get people to truly understand, not only should you be able to, but how many things you can't do and how wrong that is, the only rational human response is to start realizing this shouldn't happen to anybody. You have to make people feel how bad it really is for themselves so that they can understand how bad it is for everyone. And then maybe you can start to change the mindset. And it's a generational thing. This is not something that we fix next week or we fix next year or we fix next decade. This is, you know, 5, 6, 7 generational thinking to make this radical change slowly over time through education and information. That's the commitment that it takes starting now with us, the pioneers. The first people that set out into the wilderness never really saw the fruits of their labor. Their grandchildren and great-grandchildren did. So that's our charge now. That's how I feel about this. And in the end, though, the pioneers had a pretty good life if they didn't get hit with an arrow in the back. Some of them did. That's part of being a pioneer. And I think right now this is more important than the elections, because if I convince a person to vote for A versus B in any given election, I've accomplished the square root of F all in reality. If it actually swung the election, it's not even a big deal in most cases. But it won't. All I've done is cement somebody to a different side of a dichotomy. But if I can get one person to realize their individual human sovereignty and to understand the infringements that are upon it as we sit here as though everything is perfectly normal, and that one person gets mad, and then that one person channels that anger into positive actions and changes their lives, I've accomplished so much more. And it's easier to do. It is easier for me to convince someone who right now is intending on voting for President Hillary Clinton that they have individual sovereign human rights that are being violated by the state than it is that she would be better off voting for Scott Walker. Period. It's easier and it's more effective. Now, that's what you should do if you want to be effective. There's a danger here, though. And since it's movie and comedy and Hollywood flashback day, I'm going to flash you back to the 1970s. And I'm going to play a little bit more of this clip than is usually played when it's played. It's from a movie called Network. And it's about a TV anchorman who has found out that he's about to be thrown out and retired on his ear. And he's not happy about it. And he's also reflecting on all the things going on in the nation at the time, like the price of oil, etc., people being poor, you know, just like we have today, even though it's 30, 40 years later. And I'm going to play more of it than you usually hear when somebody uses it like this, because I think it's important to truly take in the totality and understand both the positive aspects of realizing how bad things are and how quickly those can become negatives if they're not channeled properly. And I think the total of what I'm going to play for you is better at than what people usually use when they use this clip.
How do you do, Mr. Beale?
I must make my witness.
Sure thing, Mr. Beale.
Oil ministers of the OPEC nations meeting in Vienna still haven't decided how much more to increase the price of oil next Wednesday.
Ready, BTA?
Yeah.
Iran and
okay, he came in the building about 5 minutes ago.
Call BTA.
Tell Snowden when he comes in.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
They just bought 10%.
More on that story from Edward in Vienna.
BTA?
This has been the most divisive meeting the oil states have ever had. The 13 nations of OPEC have still not been able to decide by how much to increase the price of oil. Saudi Arabia...
How much time we got?
Yesterday, for further consultations with his government, he returned to the Vienna... This is Ed Fletcher in Vienna.
Take two, Q Howard.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressmen because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window... Open it and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. I want you to get up right now. Get up, go to your windows, open them and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change.
How many stations does this go out?
You've got to get mad.
67. I know it goes to Louisville and Atlanta.
I'm not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chairs, open the window, stick your head out and yell and say, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Who are you talking to, Herb?
CGP, Atlanta.
Are they yelling in Atlanta, Herb?
Are they yelling in Atlanta, Ted?
But first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge. God.
Get up, get up, get up out of your chair.
Son of a bitch! We struck the mother lode!
Stick your head out of the window, open it, and stick your head out and keep yelling and yell, I'm as mad as hell. I'm not going to take this anymore. Just get up from your chairs right now. Go to the
Where are you
window.
Going? Everybody, I want to see if anybody's yelling.
Go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell and keep yelling. I'm
as mad as hell. I'm not going to take this anymore.
Now, I remember the first time I ever saw that, and it's worth watching the video that I'll put a link in the show notes to today to get a better understanding of everything that's going on, because there's a lot of visual components, obviously, because this is a film not made for radio. But when I first saw this, I saw the network people immediately taking what this man had said and the inspirational words he had put out and capitalizing on it for exactly the same things that he would have been opposed to. And that made me sad. And then when I saw what they were capitalizing on and people were yelling in the different cities all over the country, and they first started showing people yelling, and you could see people yelling out their windows, I thought, well, there is the good from something like this, and that is that people now know they are not alone. But if you listen, the yelling quickly turns into a heated fervor, It quickly goes from basically an anger to a rage. As the anger feeds upon anger, you get rage. And that rage can be then directed by the very people you oppose to do the very things you don't want done. That's the danger. And that's a big lesson from that movie, that in the end, the people in power remain in power as long as getting mad is all that happens. You have to start out with being angry about the fact that there are so many ways that your life is controlled. You have to actually see the control. You actually, to be blunt, have to realize that you have chains upon your neck, your shoulders, and your wrists and your ankles, and a big heavy weight that you drag around everywhere you go. It's like an invisible hologram that's there. It's been with you since birth. You've been dragging it for so long, you don't even know the weight anymore. And this is like having somebody take and spray like some sort of an aerosol that causes the holographic chains to become visible to you. And to realize your whole life, this is what you've been dragging with you. And then just look around you and see everybody else entwined in these chains. And then you actually see like these invisible masters that are walking around that occasionally take one of your chains and attach you to somebody else. And while they're still dragging their own, you're actually dragging part of their weight for them. And you're dragging them along with you. And then as you're enraged by that, to start to realize that at the same time, every once in a while, one of those masters comes along and attaches something to you and causes someone else to drag you along, like the raisin stuff. For everything that's done to harm you, something's done to actually give to you in many instances. Now, generally, what we do, if we want to bleed an animal and not kill it, we always take more blood than we should, but we never take so much as to cause it to keel over, and we give it just enough food to replace what we've taken. That's how the Maasai manage their cattle. They take milk and blood from them. And that's very similar to how governments manage citizenry. They want the cattle just healthy enough to not fall over, and to be just dependent enough to continue to follow them, but be just independent enough to graze for themselves. That is the perfect understanding of how the state manages its citizenry. And when you see that, you should become angry. You have to be angry not just for the chains you carry, not just for the people you drag, but you have to have an equal, rational anger for the people that are being forced to pull you along. And you have to accept that that's happened. And that's very hard for independent-minded, self-responsible people to do because it's invisible, so you never saw it. There's an awful lot the state does that's wrong, but sometimes you, even though you don't realize it, benefit from it. And that means that if we're to free ourselves from that, we have to take responsibility for all of those things. The reason this is important is it actually stops dead cold the one thing the state needs to keep all of this illusion going and all of this control in place. It stops you and your brother, right, and I say that in the larger concept, from hating each other. It makes you look at the machine generating the holographic chains. As long as you don't become equally outraged for all members of this society that are being chained in different ways, you will pick a segment to be angry with, and you will focus on them, and you will fall right back into the control system of the state. That's what they want. It's the only way out. And that's why the anger has to be quickly tempered and controlled and channeled into action. And you have to have the right mindset. The mindset is everything here. The mindset will lead to the proper actions. The first part of the mindset: my rights stem from my existence / creation, your choice. I don't care if you're a humanist. I don't care if you're a devout religious person. I don't care if you're a deist such as myself. I don't care if you're a pure creationist. I don't care if you're a pure evolutionist. I don't care what you are. We can all have a universal belief that the sole fact that I exist in my creation, I have rights. Whether that creation is through the evolution of random happenstance or a guided intelligent design, or God creating man from clay. No matter what you believe, you can still share the belief with others who disagree with that component of it, that by our existence we have rights as human beings. That is one of the most universal ideals ever sold to the people of the world, and that's why it's been wrapped in bullshit to control people. It is the grounding tenet of our Declaration of Independence. It is the driving force of the first 10 amendments to our Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And yet we shit on it on a daily basis. And that is proof that something can be true and used for evil at the same time. So it has been done for so long that people pay lip service if they don't really even think about it anymore. And you see the what I call the word worshippers. They think if we just get the technical language right, and somebody's giving a speech and they say something like, well, our constitutional rights, and they just wait. They wait like the nerd at the sci-fi convention that wants to ask about, you know, Star Trek episode 37 or something, and an incongruency in the storyline. They wait and they go, and they raise their hand, and the guy's up there trying to do his thing, and he knows damn well that constitutional right should be constitutionally protected, right? But he gives 20 speeches a week, and he's doing the best that he can. And the guy's like, so are you saying that our rights come from the Constitution? And of course the guy's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. And then the guy sits there all smug. This is nonsense. This is absolute nonsense. If we just have the ideal in us, then we can stop tripping over these different little technicalities in the way somebody phrases something. And this would be self-accepted. In other words, if I say something about gravity and I don't actually explain it perfectly, you still know what gravity is and you still get it. That's how self-evident this concept of your rights stemming from your creation or existence should be. The people go, yeah, well, that's what he means. Right? But it's not. That's why we have these little technical people. But you did, oh, God, those people drive me nuts. I cut them off. If I'm talking and they do that to me, I just, like, you know what? You talk about that later. I'm going to take a question that's actually real. Just a little side note there. So you start out with that. Your rights stem from your existence. The fact that you're a human, that you exist. I'm a human being. My life has value. Okay? The next is, my rights do not trump the rights of others. That is the only way for the rest of this to work. You have to first understand that you have your rights, they are your rights, and no one should take them from you, but your rights cannot be used to infringe upon others' rights of the same type. Just because you don't like something or you don't want something, or even if it adversely affects you through competition, you don't get to get rid of it because you don't like it. Because as soon as you accept the fact that, well, it's better for me if I do this, then it's better for someone else if they take yours. And all of the pitfalls that come from the rest of what I'm about to say cannot become a pitfall if those two things are held as the primary guiding tenets. My rights stem from my existence, and since others do as well, my rights do not trump your rights. Period. Okay? The next one is, I am responsible for myself, then for my family, and only then to others. And for the sake of brevity in the show notes, I did not append the last piece of this, which is, and then only by my choice. So my responsibility is first to me, and then to those that depend on me through voluntary association as family. So I should take care of my son. I should take care of my wife. I should take care of my children. You got it? The only ethical decision is to take responsibility for ourselves and for that of our children. Right? Pretty simple. It even is in permaculture. And then others would be my community, the person across the street, the person across the country, the person across the world. It is good to be charitable. It is good to help others. It is good to stand up for others. But first, you must stand for yourself. You must be able to stand for yourself. And if you start worrying about yourself, you tend to stop worrying about others, and then you have assistance with the human nature that wants to make you backslide on the last tenet. Your rights don't trump others' rights. When you start focusing on yourself, you start to see all the places your rights are infringed. and you don't like it. It feels very dirty. It feels very wrong. And every time you feel it, it reinforces for you how wrong it is when we do it to others. And then when you see it happen to somebody else, even if you completely disagree with their choices, you realize what it feels like for them and you don't want it for them. So by focusing on yourself, you become far more empathic to other human beings because you share their feelings without having to share their core beliefs. And then the next one, a right is something you have a right to pursue, not to be provided with. Just because you have a right to freedom doesn't mean that I am required to provide it to you. It means I am required not to infringe with it. Just because you have a right to happiness doesn't mean that I am required to provide it to you. So when government says, all human beings should at least have a right to good, clean, quality food and water. Okay. That doesn't mean they get it provided to them. That means that there should be no impingement, no infringement on their right to obtain it. Nor for my right to provide a solution to them for it. Like selling them food at a better price because I can, because I have more, because I produce more. And therefore I can make plenty of profit at a lower price per unit because I want to help them and I want to profit from my labor. See? A right is something you have a right to pursue, not to be provided with. And that applies to others. See, everything here applies to you and to everybody else. The next is, all systems of theft and coercion are to be resisted intelligently and peacefully. We should all resist the income tax. But we should all resist it by playing their game as well as they do. By having good accountants, good CPAs, right? Good record keeping, good policies of how we manage our own deductions so that if we're ever audited, we can walk in with a smile on our face and say, here you go. Here you go. Be prepared not just for a storm, but for an attack by the state itself. This is where we have to be in our society if we're going to head toward freedom. When someone says you can't do something, you should immediately say to yourself, not how do I convince them to let me? How can I work this system so that I can do this anyway and they can't stop me? What creative solution can I come up with? An example of this at an individual level was a gentleman that wanted to put a very nice garage in at the neighborhood I lived in Pennsylvania. He needed a zoning variance to do this. Unfortunately, he didn't tell anybody in the community that there was about 19 houses in this neighborhood, that that's what he needed and that's what he was doing. He spent an awful lot of money to get it designed by an architect, had a 3D model made up, and he went down to the Zoning and Planning Committee to make a presentation to them and say, I need a zoning variance because it's X number of feet within some distance of the main road, but you guys have no plan to widen that, and there would still be room to widen it by two lanes anyway, which is bigger than it would ever be. Is this okay? Can I get my variance? Because he lived right on the corner. And it was a beautiful garage attached to the house. There would have been no reason not to do it. And every member of the committee, the town council, looked at it and said, I don't have a problem with that. And an old lady named Agnes stood up in the back of the thing and says, well, I do, and I speak for all the people in the neighborhood. And she said she didn't want it. Because she didn't want to be the person that had to tell people, we live at the end of the street of the house with the garage out by the road. And she felt she was defending the property values, though I don't think this would have done anything to harm the property values at all. But such is the tyranny of an old lady that speaks up because she can and has the force of the state at her back. So all of a sudden, this was a guy that had just retired from trucking. He worked his whole life, and he was finally spending some of the money he saved and enjoying his retirement. Construction begins, and there's this great big huge aircraft hangar-looking thing going in on, instead of the right side of his property, the left side of his property. And I talked to him. I said, what are you putting in? He goes, oh, well, you know, the neighbors didn't want me to put a garage in, so screw them. I'm putting this in. And I looked at him and said, well, that's cool. I don't care. And he says, yeah. He goes, but I had to do it. And this cost a lot less, but I had to because I lost so much money with all the work that already went into the designing of the garage. I couldn't redesign it. I had to do this instead. and this will be a lot more of an eyesore if there's such, if it is, than my garage would have been. I'm like, what do you mean about the neighbors? And he said, he tells me the whole story I just told you, and I'm like, I never knew anything about this. And so we talked, there wasn't a single person in that neighborhood other than this old bitch, and that's what she was, an old bitch. She happened to be my next door neighbor too. Who even knew that he wanted to do it, because she was the kind of busybody that focuses on all this stuff. And now she had something she hated far much, far worse, but she couldn't do anything about it. Without even thinking about it this way, that's what this gentleman did. He said, fine, you won't let me have a garage? Then I don't need a variance on the other side of my property to put in anything I want, so I'm going to put in something much larger that in the end he ended up being more happy with. The reason he was more happy with it, a lot more space, he could do a lot more with it, he could fit more vehicles inside it, he could set up his whole workshop, and this guy kind of went out, and he was a great guy, too, to tell you the type of person that this lady was crapping on. He went out and bought a great big lawnmower, and a great big snowblower, and a big plow blade for the lawnmower, too, so that he could blow snow, and he could also, like, push snow. And whenever we had big snowfalls, nobody in the whole neighborhood, except Agnes, ever had to clear or shovel their driveway ever again, because he went around the whole neighborhood and he did everybody's for free. And when you tried to give him money, he's like, I don't want money. He goes, I don't work anymore. All of you people are working for a living. I did that for 40 years. I know what it's like. I have the time now. Now you can get out of here and go to work. Hell of a guy. Hell of a guy. This is what happens when humans get creative in solving their problems, though. They create freedom for themselves, and then they can use that freedom to help others. No one had to pass a law to make this guy help his neighbors. But someone else used the law to prevent this man from pursuing his goals. If we respected each other's rights, it would have never been an issue in the first place. But in the end, a better solution was found because the restriction was manipulated to the advantage of who was restricted. That's what we need to do. We need to intelligently and peacefully resist things. When we resist with violence, we strengthen the people in power. When we resist with stupidity, we strengthen the people in power. When we resist with intelligence and peace, we weaken those in power. The next thing is, an unfair system is not an excuse for inaction. When I do talks, I have people always say stuff like, I will never own land because it's only renting land because they tax the land. And I'm like, well, you live somewhere, so you're paying somebody else's property tax for them. Do you understand that? And I hear so many people that use what can't be done as an excuse for not doing what could be done. If you are going to have sovereign individual human rights, you need to understand that every single right comes with a corresponding responsibility. I believe you have a right to own a gun. I believe you have a responsibility not to load it, lay it on the side of a tree in your front yard where kids walk by every day. I don't believe the responsibility of gun ownership is owning a magazine that has 10 rounds or less in it. That's what the government believes. But I do believe it means securing your weapon. It also means you have a right to have a gun, and you have a right to go out and shoot and train with a gun. But you don't have a right to fire it across the street at your neighbor's house because, well, he has some cool stuff hanging from the window that you thought would make a good target. Every right has a corresponding responsibility. And one of the responsibilities that we have in regards to our liberty is to exercise it. And if you don't exercise a right, you lose it. They teach you that in grade school when they're trying to convince you to vote. They will use the truth to sell you a lie. Very simple. Next, I can't change society, but I can change myself. So I have a duty to do so. I have a responsibility to do so. To change myself to be more liberty-minded. To believe more in myself than I believe in the need for others to do things for me. And last, I am a human being. My life matters, so I will not waste it. So many people are out there bitching about everything that's wrong, but they're not doing anything, and they're wasting the gift that is life. I do not share the belief of many of you who are a part of organized religions, but I do believe in God. I don't even try to define God, but I believe in a God. I believe in an intelligent creator to what we have. And I believe the one gift of our creation truly is the life that we have to live. And I believe to not capitalize on that gift is a waste. It is a disgraceful waste of an incredible gift. And again, most people that choose inaction use the excuse about what they can't do for not doing what they could do. If you want rights, you cannot wait for someone to bestow them upon you. You cannot ask that someone restore them to you. You have to claim them. You have to take them. You have to seize them. Again, this is not a revolution anymore. It has gone so far for so long. Revolutions will no longer work. This is an insurgency. This is an insurgency. There were plenty of times along the way as the government got greater and greater control of the people that people would have been willing to make the deal of a revolution. Just stop. Just stop here. Here you shall come and no further. But the government couldn't stop. By its very nature, it cannot stop. By its very nature, government begats more government. It must. And therefore, it will always get bigger. It will always get more oppressive. It will always get stronger. There will never be smaller government as long as government is permitted to exist in its current form, where the responsibility to preserve the rights of individuals lies not with the individuals that have the rights, but with the state. Until people stand up and demand their rights and claim their rights and act on their rights, it will not change. Government will continue to do what it's always done, like a single cell organism dividing every so many seconds and getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until such time that it must collapse upon itself. But then, like the Terminator, if the mind of the people has not changed, it will reconstitute itself into something that is probably far worse. It may even look pretty, but it will be just as deadly. A velvet fist is not a velvet fist if the velvet is covering steel. That is the yoke of your masters. You have to cast it aside. You have to resist it at every intelligent and peaceful level that you possibly can. It might involve geographic relocation. It might just be like, there's too many things I can't do here. So instead of bitching about it, I'm going to go somewhere I can do these things. It might involve being really creative on how you break the law without breaking the law. It's up to you. You got to figure it out. My final thoughts on this are, you are a human being. Your life does matter. I really don't want you to waste the opportunity that you have. Every day that you get up, that you're alive, that you feel the blood coursing through your veins, you should be working toward more for yourself. That is not wrong. The more you have, the more you can give. The more you can give, the more you do. Your life matters. Don't waste it. And with that, this has been Jack Spirico with another edition of the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
Sometimes we forget we are what we eat. I don't know the answer. It's like there's nothing I can do. It's the price we pay, I guess, when we follow all the rules. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.